Is Dr. Carlos Munoz Jr. I'm a member of the Oral History Committee of the Society for American Baseball Research. Today is February the 12th, 2002, and I am privileged to have with me today Mr. Mitchell Page, who played for the Oakland Athletics for 7 years and 1 year for Pittsburgh. And so today I will be interviewing him. Now, as a matter of record, we have to do this preliminary bureaucratic thing, Mitchell. I got to read this to you. We need you to okay this interview, and basically, the copy of this tape will be going to the Hall of Fame in Cooperstown, New York, and SABR, the Society for American Baseball Research, will keep a copy and reserves the right to distribute the tape or transcriptions of the interview to other baseball research that might want to use it down the road. And basically, is that okay with you?
Yes.
Can you say real loud?
Mitchell Page, yes, I give my approval that you can take that interview any place you want to.
Thank you, Mitchell. That's very, very nice of you. Okay, now, to start off with, I got a bunch of questions here, but you know, we don't have to go according to what the questions are. If at any time you want to deviate from it or you want to add on, you know what I'm saying?
Yes.
You want to just speak your mind about a particular thing that comes to, you know, to your mind, then go ahead and feel free to do so. Basically, I do know that you were born in 1951 from talking about it the other day, and you were born in Compton, Los Angeles?
Yes, born in Compton, California, you know. And we had a great time, and, you know, lots of people hear about Compton, but
right.
And that was, when I grew up in Compton, it wasn't the gangbang stuff, you know, we had all our problems with neighborhoods, outside the neighborhood,
right.
But like everybody else does, but we never had the gangbang.
Right. Now, you were born in 51, which means that by the 1960s, when the Civil Rights Movement broke out in the South, you were about, what, 12 or so, 13 maybe? Do you recall?
Right around that. Yeah. Not in the South, but the Watts riots, I could
sit on... The Watts riots, right.
The Watts riots in 65, I was able to sit on top of my roof
uh-huh.
and watch a whole
wow.
city destroyed. Yeah. So, you know, I saw all of that. You
that
know,
must and, have been scary to you, huh?
Well, actually, I threw newspaper for 5 years at that time, and the place I threw newspaper at was right in the center of it, and they burned the whole shopping center down. So,
wow.
So I was, you know... I saw a little bit of everything.
Gee, man, that yeah, I recall that time myself very vividly, and it was a scary moment in my life. Although I wasn't living down where it happened, I was down in East L.A., not too far from there. But at that time, were already playing ball at that age when the Watts riots took place, or not?
Well, I was playing Little League.
Little League.
Yeah, yeah, Little League, and what? 65, so that makes me 14.
Uh-huh.
So I was playing Little League baseball in junior high school, playing baseball in junior high school. So I was, yes, I've been playing baseball since I was 9, 10 years old.
Right.
So I've been part of my life.
Where did you go to junior high school?
I went to Mel Bunch Junior High School.
Uh-huh.
And then I went to Centennial High School.
Centennial High School.
Yes, Mel Bunch.
Okay. Did you come from a big family, or was it a small family?
Well, I got a twin brother, just me and him.
You got a twin brother?
I did a twin, uh-huh. 10 minutes apart.
I'll be done.
And three sisters, yeah.
I'll be
and,
done.
Uh-huh. All my sisters, my baby sister, mm-hmm. Debbie, she graduated from UCLA. She's a lawyer.
Yeah.
She is a district attorney in L.A.
So you got your own personal lawyer in the way, huh?
Well, what I did,
yeah, right.
I got advice.
So did your twin brother play ball?
Well, you know, the thing was, my brother was a better ball player than I was.
Really?
And the thing was that we went out for the team, just like, you know, right now. We're doing an interview. My boy is a freshman.
Right.
Your son is a freshman.
Right.
Neither one of us, we didn't make the team.
Right.
And Al Collins, who played for the Kansas City Royals, was
right.
my best friend, my buddy.
Is that right?
So I hung around with the bat boy, the water boy.
Uh-huh.
And in the last 2 weeks, football started. The yeah. coach was a football coach.
Yeah.
So he took out his football player, so I got cut, my brother got cut, and so I hung around and was a bat boy and this and that, and then I walk home with them after the game. You know, I was a player, was in uniform,
right.
And then the last 2 weeks, you know, they brought in a new coach, and then I made a team the following year. You know, I played for the same coach in the summer baseball league. He
right.
knew my talent, but I knew I got cut, not because of my talent. I got cut because of favoritism, because the football coach made sure his football players made the baseball team. So that's why I tell these kids out here right now, you know, like, you know, all of them ain't going to make the team.
Right.
So if you don't make the team, it's,
exactly,
you know, you gotta work harder.
How did you become interested in baseball at a young age? I mean, what made it for you, the game that you wanted to play?
Well, my mom and dad, I always loved baseball. They always talk about the Dodgers and the Giants, you know.
Uh-huh.
And so when I grew up, I just, me and my brother, like I said, I have a twin brother, you know. We had a couple fights. He was a Giants fan. He was a McCovey, Marshall, uh-huh, Oliva fan,
right,
and I was a Dodger fan,
uh-huh,
you know.
Yeah.
So we had a couple fights, you know. Uh-huh. You know, I many a night, me and my brother went to bed watching, listening to the Dodger on the radio, because
right,
we didn't have so much TV at that time.
Did your dad teach you the basics of baseball first, or was it somebody else?
Well, my dad always went out there and played catch and stuff with me. You know, no, he didn't teach. No, he wasn't a big coach, but he was out there. You know, he said, "Come on, boy, let's go out there and play catch." We go out there and play catch.
Right.
You know, he never. You know, like I used to work with my dad. You know, and my dad used to do lots of moving.
Yeah.
He was a hauling company. He had a own hauling company, so he moved certain people from one warehouse to the next warehouse. And so I used to go in there and work with him. And you know, we ride, and he said, "Well, so what are you going to do?" You know, especially like right now, just like our boys, 14, 15.
Right.
What are you going to do in 4 or 5 years? I said, "Well, Dad, I'm going to play professional baseball." He said, "What if you don't?" I said, "Dad, I'm going to play professional baseball."
Right.
You
no
know?
No buts about it, huh?
Right. You know, that was my goal, to play that.
Well, that sounds like my
son. He never knocked it from me, neither.
Yeah. That sounds like my son, you know. He says he's already thinking about his first contract and buying us a new house, you know.
Mm-hmm. You don't need a new house for 5 years.
Yeah, right. Did you do well in high school? I mean, once you did make the team afterwards, did you...
Well, I made all city.
You made all city.
But I hit 250.
Uh-huh.
You know.
So you were a defensive guy.
No. I hit a 9 mile, I struck out.
Uh-huh.
And my career turned around when I went to Cal Poly.
Uh-huh.
And a scout named George Genovese came out. And, you know, I used to go to the batting cage and hit the ball like,
right,
oh, man, people stop and watch me hit.
Right.
But I remember what I was doing. Whenever I got in the game, I wasn't doing the number one thing, was just seeing the ball out of the pitcher's hand.
Yeah.
And George Genovese
came
home. My year in at Cal Poly, when he came out there, he gave a speech.
Right.
And he put the ball up there, so he see the ball out of the pitcher's hand.
Uh-huh.
I went out there. I hit 315 that year.
Wow.
And then I went home that summer and played with the same guys. And I always was... the 7th, 8th, and ninth guy in the lineup. I was the number one guy, and all my buddies said, "What happened to you?" Nothing happened. Was, you know, you watch a pitcher machine.
Right.
The number one thing you do, you watch the ball come out.
Right.
But I wasn't doing that at the same time when I was watching the pitcher.
Right.
I watched the pitcher hold motion, and the number one kids, I saw the ball out the pitcher hand,
yeah,
and my whole career turned around. I went out of high school. I did get drafted out of high school. I got drafted in the 29th round by Oakland.
Wow.
And I was scared. Two of my buddies had already signed, who I knew at that time was better than me, and they got released. So I didn't sign, because I figured I'd get released. It was better than me.
Yeah.
But I went from the 29th round to the 3rd round.
Yeah.
I got drafted in the 3rd round by the Pittsburgh Pirates.
Did you get drafted as an outfielder or infielder?
Outfielder.
Outfielder.
Yes.
And that's what you mostly played in high school and Little League, or did you play different positions?
No, I mean, I played shortstop in junior high school.
Uh-huh.
And then I got bigger. You know, I was lean and skinny
in
junior high school, but I got bigger. But no, I played outfield the majority of my career.
Okay, so you started from high school on up, more or less, huh?
Yes.
Okay. Did you, when you were growing up, did you have a favorite player? You mentioned the Dodgers already, but that was your team. But did you have a particular player that inspired you?
You ain't gonna believe this. I got two idols.
Really?
Two idols in sports.
Uh-huh.
Sandy Koufax and Muhammad Ali.
Uh-huh.
Those my idol. I love everything about Muhammad Ali.
Yeah.
And Santa Koufax, I was throwing newspaper,
right,
and we got free ticket to the baseball game.
Yeah.
When he threw a no-hitter against the Chicago Cubs.
Uh-huh.
I mean, those are my two idols. You know, Willie Stargell is one of my tops.
Right.
But I'm saying, if I have to say who is my top two guys that I really look at,
it's
Santa Koufax and Muhammad Ali.
So Sandy was the only baseball player, and Muhammad, of course, my God, he was a phenomenal guy.
Yep.
I mean, I had the opportunity to meet him once. And
I met him, too. I got his autograph.
I was so inspired just being next to him.
Yep.
Did you, you already mentioned that when your dad asked you about what you want to do with your life, and you told him baseball. And did your mom also agree with him that that was okay, or did you have any resistance from your mother?
Oh, no, no, no. My mom, I mean, at that time, you know how I got my baseball glove?
Yeah.
I got my baseball glove through food stamps. Not food stamps,
I remember
the
those.
Gas stamps or whatever stamps you use. And you accumulate some of these stamps.
Yeah, you go and trade it in.
Yeah, you trade them in.
Stamps.
Trade stamps. And that's how
I used to collect those too.
The first baseball glove I got.
I remember that. I remember that very, very well.
No, my mom and dad were very supportive when I went for what I wanted. You know, my mom and dad got divorced. They got separated. But my dad was, you know, all my friends, they never knew my mom and dad was separated.
Yeah, right.
Because 6 o'clock, my dad always at the house for dinner.
Right.
And then he'd go home.
Right.
And I knew my dad was going to be there by 5:30, 6 o'clock. I took the car. He gave me the car. I said, Dad, I'm going to the batting cage.
Wow.
He gave me the keys and let me go to the batting cage.
Wow. That's great. Now, you said you were drafted by the Oakland A's, and when you finally signed up, can you describe the experience? How did you feel when you were actually signing up with the Oakland A's? And who signed you up, by the way?
Well, Phil Polk, who signed in this area. I think he has something to do with, he's with
around.
Danny Ford. He was big in Oakland. He had a lot to do with Oakland ball player. I know Danny Ford down in L.A.
Yeah.
Oh, Phil Polk is one of the legends in baseball. If you ever look him up, Phil Polk is one of the best guys because, you know what, number one, he was not afraid to go to a black neighborhood.
There you go.
Okay, because I work in Park and Recreation.
Sure.
When he drafted me, tell you a story. When he drafted me, I work in Park and Recreation at that time in a totally black, 99.9% black neighborhood.
Right.
And Phil Polk, so I said, no, I'm not going to sign. And Phil Polk said, I want you to do one thing. He said, and I live on this.
Right.
He said, I'm going to come back in 2 weeks.
Right.
See, one thing I want you to do for me when I come back in 2 weeks, whatever your decision is, don't ever say, I should have done this or I should have done that.
Mm-hmm.
He came back in 2 weeks, but he caught me at the job.
Ah.
He come walk around, and we walk around talking, and we go behind the gym, and they are shooting dice back there.
Right.
And the guy said, why you bring this white guy back here? I said, go ahead, guys, do your thing. Phil Polk signed me, and
Does he spell his last name P-O-L-K?
No,
P-O-L-T?
P-O-L-K.
P-O-L-K.
Yeah, Phil Polk.
Yeah, right, okay.
He's still in baseball today.
Okay, well, we got to remember that name. Now, once you were signed up, what happened? Did you get sent to single A, double A, or how did that go? Rookie league, I guess?
Well, when I signed, I left here. I went to Bradenton for rookie league. I stayed there 2 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
Then in 2 weeks, they moved me up.
Mm-hmm.
I signed in June.
Mm-hmm.
They sent me to Charleston, South Carolina, that low A ball club. I stayed there about 2.5-3 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
And they sent me to Salem, Virginia, the top A club.
Right.
So I made 3 moves in one.
Wow.
Between June and September.
Which is exceptional.
Well, I just got back. Just got back yesterday.
Right.
They put me in the Hall of Fame in Salem.
Yeah, congratulations.
You know, so, I moved real quick. I went A-ball, double-A, triple-A baseball, and to the major league.
And then the second year went up to the majors, or was it the
first? My third year.
Your third year.
Well, I had a bet in college.
Yeah.
I told a guy they won't pay me off because they say, the half a year.
Uh-huh.
I told him in 3 years I'll be in the big league. It took me three and a half years.
So you go to college after high school then?
Yes.
Oh, I see.
I went to Cal Poly Pomona.
So you went from high school to Cal Poly Pomona.
Yes.
And you played there 1 year or 2 years?
2 years.
2 years. And then you got signed out of Cal Poly Pomona.
Yes.
Ah, okay. All right. That's important to put in there. So then in your third year, you got up there. And, of course, memorable year. I remember seeing you play myself. That was your rookie year, and you had a phenomenal year.
Mm-hmm.
You hit 307.
Yes.
And you won Rookie of the Year award, as I remember.
Yeah.
And so how was that year to you? What was the main thing out of that year that you remember the most, or that you cherish the most?
Well, it had to be a Monday night baseball game that we had, ABC Monday night baseball game.
Yeah.
Because all my family, all my friends, they saw the game. I hit 2 home runs and a triple.
Wow.
My home run. But Jim Rice hit 3 home runs.
Oh, yeah.
But I hit the home run to beat him. Wow. That's probably the best game I ever had because everybody who knew me or loved me or friends, they got to see the game on national TV.
Right. And so that still stands as your most thrilling night in all of your 8 years in major league baseball? baseball. Huh?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Wow, that must have been exciting, man. I bet that's a lot of.
Well, I got a phone. I had to take the phone off the hook for like two or three days.
I bet you did. Now, how did you feel getting up to the major leagues? I mean, I know for a rookie, it's always a tough thing to blend in with the veterans and all that. But were you embraced right off the bat? Did you feel at home right off the bat, or was it a transition period you went through to get, you know, to adjust?
Well, when I got to the big league, you know, only veteran they really had were Bobby Blue and Dick Allen.
Right.
Dick Allen played halfway through the year.
Right.
But I used to hook up, and, you know, and I always say to myself, and then at the time I got to the big league, that's when Charlie Finley was selling ball club. We had Mo Rookie. You know, I already had leadership, you know. So I was like a semi-leader in a way of how you play the game.
Right.
And so I always say to myself, you know, I look back, I say, I wish I would have went to a veteran ball club and be a rookie with 15 veterans.
Right.
I think I'd have been a better ball player at that time, you know.
Right.
So I look at it and say to myself, the rookie year, I mean, it made me better. That's why I'm still in baseball right now. That's why I'm coaching baseball right now, because I learned so much through my career, which made me a better coach, because,
of course,
you know, one thing I'm saying to myself is that the way I was coached, and I'm a coach now, I'm going to coach better than the way I was coached, because if I was coached better than what I was, I would have been a ball player.
Right.
So I'm going to coach better than... So, I was coached.
In a way, you learned from the mistakes of your coaches.
Yes.
Right. So you paid attention to that. And you said, when I become a coach.
Well, it hurt me. ain't too many good coaches I had around me. Gene Baker was probably the best coach I ever had in the Pirates. But see, I left the Pirates real quick.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
If I stayed in the Pirate organization, I'd probably been a better ball player.
Yeah.
But I came over here to Oakland. I mean, the coaches, you know, they didn't bring much to the table. They were just collecting paychecks.
Right. Right, that's true. And unfortunately true in many ways, in many cases, or used to be in the old days anyway. So getting back to Vital Blue and Dick Allen, those were the only two other black players on the team at the time.
And Billy North.
And Billy North, right. Mm-hmm. So you guys all hung together all the time?
It took me, you know, Dick Allen really took me under his wing.
Uh-huh.
You know, and Vital Blue, he talked to Vital Blue was a pitcher, so.
Yeah.
So he couldn't bring too much of me offense.
Right.
You know, Billy North helped me with my outfield. You know, I made 14 errors my first year.
Yeah.
And the second year, I made 7 errors. Billy Norris helped me with my outfield play.
Right.
So, you know, I learned from those guys. That's what I'm saying. I would have been a better ball player if I'd have came up and played with a veteran ball club.
Right. How did you feel that time as a young black man, you know, making it? And, you know, at that time, I think it was predominantly white Major League Baseball, right? I mean, compared to now and compared to, you know, at the time Jackie Robinson broke the color barrier. But how did you feel about race at that time, about those things? Did you notice anything going on or not? Did you?
No, not really, because I wanted to Cal Poly, and it was too black. Myself and John, I forgot his first last name. Uh-huh. There was two blacks on the team, and the white ball players, they treated me with so much respect. It was unbelievable. John Scalinas over there in Cal Poly.
Right.
I mean, the racial thing in baseball, it wasn't there with me. You know, it was not there. If it was, it was very hidden, you know.
Right.
You know, you might have some country white guys, this or that, never been around black ball player. I mean, coming up in the minor leagues, too.
Right.
I mean, you know, you heard, you know, I put them in their space, in their place.
Right.
You know, they got out of line, but, you know, we had love. I had lots of love for most of the ball players I ever played with in the minor leagues and the big leagues.
So you had a very good experience in terms of all the being accepted.
No, it was nowhere
feeling accepted. Yeah.
Well, you know, like I said, if you want to talk about race, you know, like I said, Dick Allen was there.
Yeah.
And Dick Allen sit there and try to talk about his career with me.
Yeah.
Dick Allen came out with tears
about
what he went through to get to the big leagues, you know, but I never had to go through it.
Exactly, because he had been around at the beginning when there was more of that stuff going on.
Right.
Now, aside from that particular first year, do you think your first year was, after all your 8 years taking together, your first year was really the most exciting one still? I mean, or was it other times during your career that stands out as well?
Well, actually, my last year with Oakland was, you know, me and Billy Martin have some problems together with communication.
Yeah, I have problems with everybody.
And, you know, when I came back to big leagues, I'll tell you, I was at my best.
Yeah.
And then I ended up tearing my ankle up, and I missed the rest of the season.
Right.
You know, I tore ligaments and damaged my ankle. And if I have to look at, you know, the point where you say, well,
yeah,
decided the point was just that one day in the big leagues.
Yeah.
That you as a kid, you sit back and say, okay, I'm going to play in the big leagues.
Right.
And you made it.
Right.
Yeah, my family was so, my mom and dad, you know, they were proud of me. I made it.
Right on. Well, your whole family, I mean,
yes.
Your mom and dad, I'm sure. And what type of hitter were you think?
I was a line drive hitter with power.
Uh-huh.
Okay, but most of my, you know, like today, if I could elevate the ball better,
yeah,
I probably have more home runs,
right,
you know.
Right.
But I know how to score a baseball. Yeah. And the only thing I learned was hit the ball hard.
Right.
And the only way
right.
you hit the ball hard is dead center. And I learned that.
Right, right.
And I hit a line drive 6 feet high.
Right.
I remember Al LaBosse, you know, he's a radio guy for St. Louis now.
Yeah, yeah.
I tell him, I said, I hit the best line drive in the world off of you. Hit a line drive, the shortstop jumped for it, missed it, and hit the left field wall. That's like,
that's
so I can hit a line drive.
That's for sure. Now, what about in terms of your base running? Were you a good base runner, you think?
Very good. Man, I stole 42 bases. I set the record. I stole 27 in a row without being caught. I broke the record, which was broke later by Willie Wilson.
Right.
42. I averaged 15 to 25 stolen bases a year.
Uh-huh.
No, I knew how to steal. I had good speed, above average speed.
You were damn good. What about as a fielder? What were your strengths and weaknesses, you think, as a fielder?
My strength was I could get to the ball.
Uh-huh.
My weakness was hold on to the ball. No. Because I always say to myself, I hit my way to the big leagues.
Yeah.
And, you know, if I knew what I knew now, I could have been a better better defensive player. But I always thought, I'm going to hit my way to the big leagues. And you know, and that's why, coaching right now, I might have a good hitter.
Yeah.
And I might, you know, he might come hit with me in the minor leagues.
Right, right.
When I was coaching the minor league, I said, right. No, you go over there and work with the outfield guy. I'll take care of your hitting, get your defense together.
Right.
Because because I would have been a better ball, you know, like I said, I'd have played longer.
Yeah.
You know, if I was a better defensive ball player.
So getting back to your hitting, do you recall, was there any particular hitter that you said, oh, man, that guy's got a good stance, or, you know, he's doing something good that I should copy? Or did you just go ahead and develop your own?
I was self-taught. I bought a little projection type of, I bought a camera, and I bought the projection.
Right.
When you do, you got.
Right.
And I used to hang a ball from the ceiling of my garage and hit a baseball
right.
there.
Right.
Hit it off there. Like I said, when my dad come over, I pick up the car and go to the batting cage. And, you know, I didn't copy nobody. I learned how to score a baseball on my own.
Right.
But you know, like, if I do what I do now, it'd be unbelievable.
So you threw right and hit right, or did you hit left?
I threw right and hit left.
Right. That's right. Right. I remember one time I saw you. You came up as either a pinch hitter. Or I think it was a pinch hitter one time, and it was you guys were behind, and then you got up there and you tripled.
Okay.
Man, it was a great hit. I remember you went a 3-2 count, I believe, at that time. It was really a good at bat for you.
Going this way.
So now, did you remember your first spring training well at all? I mean,
in the big league?
Yeah, your very first spring training.
Well, my first spring training with the Pirates, they put me off with the has been.
Uh-huh.
We on the bus going to St. Peter somewhere.
Yeah.
Then they called five of us off the bus. Told me I was traded.
Yeah.
And I went to spring training. And then I got traded. I went down to Arizona and met the Oakland A's.
So you got traded during spring training?
During spring training. On the trail of daylight.
Uh-huh.
March 15th. I had about 3:57 in spring training. And when I came in there, I had a good friend of mine, Wayne Gross,
who
went to Cal Poly with me.
Right.
And
I third base, right?
Yes. I hit the ball, you know. Like I said, I mean, you know, I went on there and set spring training on fire. I had a hell of a spring training.
Yeah.
Close to about 350, 370.
Do you think it motivated you that the Pirates got rid of you like that real quick or not?
Yes, because I knew I had no... The Pirates did me a favor.
Right.
Almost I love the Pirates.
Right.
Because I'm going back to AAA no matter what. Because the Pirates, they have Oliver, Parker,
sure.
Bob Robinson, Hepner, and I wasn't going to make that club no matter what I do in spring training. So they did me a favor. They you know, I was A-ball, double-A, triple-A. I can say that, but...
Yeah.
Only because I got traded. Otherwise, I'm back in AAA for the following year.
Exactly.
So they did me a favor by trading me.
So you were really happy about that, I bet, huh?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Now, did you get a lot of good instruction during spring training, you think?
Well, not like they get today.
Nothing.
I think Gene Baker and Johnny Lipon and Al Monchak. I mean, probably three top instructors, but it's nothing compared to what the kids get today. These kids are lucky in Major League Baseball right now.
They got more resources now. They have coaches.
Yes, because, you see, when I played, you had no coach. You had a manager.
Yeah.
You had no pitching coach. You had no hitting coach. Right now, they got an infield coach, a pitching coach, base running coach, who come around. I mean, it's night and day compared to what the way it was when
I
was playing.
So I would assume, therefore, that during the regular season, you got very little instruction.
You got instruction from your teammates.
Right. You were on there, you know, comparing notes with your teammates, and that was about it.
Right. That's what it was.
Yeah. What about, playing in the big leagues, did you have a particular favorite baseball park?
Fenway Park.
Was
I probably hit 357, probably hit about 12 home runs in Fenway Park.
And why was that, you think?
Life was so low, I guess. I don't know. I just loved Fenway Park. I mean, when I went in Fenway Park, I knew if I play four games, I'm going to leave out of there with 2 to 4 home runs.
Right.
And, hit the left field wall a couple of times.
Right.
I knew I'm going to come out of there with a good game.
Just
walking in there, you just felt so comfortable in Fenway Park.
I'll be darned. I'm going to go there for the first time in June.
Oh, okay. You love it.
Yeah.
But do it because they're going to build a new ballpark.
I know. That's why I'm going to go, Now, in terms of the least favorite one, which one was that? The one that you hated the most?
Minnesota. I mean, that's one ballpark I had no luck. Mm-hmm. And Baltimore, too.
They had the dome already by that time?
At the end of career. But I'm saying earlier, and maybe you say Baltimore. I hit somebody in the old Baltimore ballpark.
Yeah, right.
But I hit somebody ball on a warning track in Baltimore. It was unbelievable. People say, who the toughest pitcher you ever faced? Jim Palmer.
Right.
Not because he struck me out. He might have struck me out 3 times out of 30 at bats.
Right.
I'll see him. I say, but you know what? Every time I made him turn his head because I put the ball on. But he had so much. He take a little bit off. He had on.
Right.
And the ball was on the warning track. I never could finish a job.
Right.
It was like a hang with him every time I faced him. He was the toughest pitcher for me to get a hit off of.
But so therefore, he was the best pitcher you ever faced, I guess, huh? Or not?
For me, because I could square. I didn't square it, but I did enough that I had no success.
What about your favorite umpire? Was there one?
What's his name? Dutch.
Dutch. Huh?
Dutch. I don't know. Dutch. He made you in Dutch guy. He make you. I mean, the way he called balls, strikes. He made you. He embarrassed you. I say Dutch. God damn, I know it's a strike, but don't holler at me.
Right.
He didn't holler at me. Uh-huh. I mean, the way he called the game.
Yeah.
Dutch was probably the best guy. And I'll tell you what, Richie Garcia. Probably the best. I'll tell you, I'm very disappointed.
Mm-hmm.
Not disappointed. I'm just saying, Richie Garcia was the best umpire in the American League.
Yeah.
Because you never questioned him.
Right.
He had one question, and that was in Baltimore, that ball that kid called. But I'll tell you what, most coaches would tell you, if Richie Garcia call you out,
you're out.
He's probably the best umpire that I ever been around.
Now, who was the least favorite of the umpires? why?
Ken Kaiser. Because Ken Kaiser, you never say anything. It's his way, that's it. He's out of baseball now.
Yeah.
you never could talk to Ken.
Did you ever get thrown out of a game?
In the big leagues?
Yeah.
In the minor league, I know I did. But in the big leagues?
Yeah.
I don't think so. I really can't remember when I got thrown out of a game in the big leagues.
You always kept your cool, in other words.
Yeah.
Look. Okay, now getting toward the end in your career, how did you realize that it was over for you?
Well, I quit because I lost the love of the game. I was 32. And me and Billy Martin, I sit down on the bench.
Yeah.
Over a 3-year period. I was blackballed, tell you the truth. I popped off during the strike. Billy sent me down 2 days before the strike, and I popped off to the L.A. Times, popped off. And I was blackballed. I know that. I was blackballed out of baseball.
Yeah.
So I bought, Oakland had to pay me. And, you look at the numbers. They sent me to AAA. I played 60 games in AAA.
Yeah.
I had 61 RBI, 17 home runs, hit .357. So they had to bring me back up.
Right.
So they sent me back out of spring. I did the same thing, and they was losing. So they had to bring me back up. But I wasn't going to play. Over a 3-year period, I had about 180 bats over a 3-year period.
Wow.
I mean, they would pitch it right hand here before they pitch it me.
Yeah.
So at the end of that, I say, I'm tired of it. I lost the love of the game.
Right.
And actually, I had a chance to go to minor league with Minnesota at that time. I just said, hell with it. I quit.
Yeah.
And it's not that I never quit the game because baseball beat me.
Right.
It's just that I lost the love of the game. Right. I stayed away from the game for 5 years.
So the politics got to you, in other words, the politics of the strike and all that kind of stuff, huh?
No, not the strike. The strike had nothing, just the point that at that time, if I was playing, if I did the same thing, another team would have picked me up.
Yeah.
But I was blackballed, and no organization would have going to give me a chance to come back because, like I said, they, Oakland A's had to still pay me over a 10-year period.
What did you say to the L.A. Times that was particularly, you know, not liked by the people in power? In
I don't remember. Look up the article. I didn't want to go there, no. Well, you know.
Mean, that was like a contract issue? You spoke up for the players?
No. It was stupidity for him sending me down 2 years. The worst thing I probably say was Billy made a decision. He's a general manager. He should have been smart enough to know a strike was coming.
Yeah.
Well, why are you going to sit me down before a strike?
I see, okay.
You know, it was stupidity on his time.
So, in other words, he took it personal, and he took it kind of like...
Oh, he put it in the paper. You look at the paper, the paper say that Bishop Payne would never play for us again.
Yeah.
And he made a point there.
That's what it was. Now, so after you quit baseball, what did you do at that point?
Well, I opened up a clothing store for my wife. I opened up a record shop, you know. Then my son came.
In L.A.?
No, here in the Bay Area, in Oakland. So, and then me and my wife, you know, over 50 years of marriage, you know, we separated, and then got the divorce. So I decided, you know, I'll get back at baseball. And say, when I left Oakland, Sandy Alderson, one thing, I don't know if they ever repeat this, the Hoss family is probably the best thing that happened in the Bay Area.
Oh, yeah, I know. I think it's, everybody would agree with
me. And me and Sandy are very close. And Sandy, at the time that we did negotiate to say, okay, well, defer everybody. Let me walk. I'll go my own way.
Yeah.
He told me if I ever wanted a job in baseball to call him. Yeah. I called, picked up the phone maybe on Monday.
Yeah.
2 weeks later, he gave me a job in AAA.
Right.
You know, after the divorce guy, I needed to change the series. So I got back in baseball. I went right to AAA. I didn't have to go to rookie ball and learn how to coach A ball. I went right to AAA. Stayed there 2.5 years, went to the big league as a coach.
You were a hitting coach or not at that time?
Hitting coach and outfield coach.
I see,
Yes.
And so then that's how they got you started into what you're doing now, and then be pretty much a hitting coach.
Well, you know, I have to thank the Oakland A's and Sandy Alderson for giving me a chance to get back in baseball so quickly.
Right. So you had a good break there. What about traveling? I mean, you know, God, all these years of traveling. Do you like to travel?
I love it.
You do love it.
I don't love it. What I went through the last couple of days, you know, but safety is better than anything.
Right.
But
no,
I love, you know, I got lots of people throughout the country. You know, I call myself international. I have more friends outside of Oakland than I do inside of Oakland.
Right.
The people I want to hang with, I want to be with, and enjoy being with.
Right. But I guess you don't get homesick per se then in that regard, right? I mean, you don't get
homesick for my boy.
For your boy.
That's by at home, and you're like, I learned how to cook now, I'm telling you. I can cook. Maybe I'm going to bring you my salad over one day. Cook some spaghetti and meatballs and stuff.
Hey, I'll take you up on that.
All I do is, you know, I leave here in 2 days.
Yeah.
And so, you know, one of my female field might give me a home-cooked meal, but otherwise, I'm going to be out of, I'm going to eat out of a restaurant. I get tired of restaurant food.
When you were playing ball, did you have a favorite roommate that you traveled with on the Oakland A's? Did you guys have roommates when you traveled at that time or not?
Oh, you don't want to hear the story. You want to hear the story?
Yeah, sure.
Right, when I was a child, I saw a kid get hit by an ice cream truck.
Ooh, God.
Right, so my first year in the big leagues, we had roommates.
Right.
So I sleep with the lights on.
Right.
So I'm going to be Eagle. I'm going to be Mountcho. And, I have to sleep, so when I wake up, I got to know where I'm at. So I'm going to be macho. I didn't sleep with the lights on.
Right.
So what happened was, I woke up in the night. I didn't know where I was. And then I go to my rage.
Yeah.
And my roommate finally got me under attack. I said, man, God, I thought 20 people was jumping on me. He said, you know what? If you came in my bed, it would have been 21. And he would have been for real. So the next day, I had one roommate one dime. You know, I had to pay the half of the cost. I had a roommate one night in the big leagues. Next day, I went and I got my own room, so I sleep with my lights on.
So you got your own. You never had roommates after that, huh?
You're right.
Who was that roommate, remember?
Mallory. Yeah, he didn't get much time, but he played in the big league a couple of years.
Did you guys have any curfew you had to put up with when you were playing?
Well, the curfew was almost like, you know, they always tell you 12 o'clock, 1 o'clock. Yeah. You know, if you ain't got what you want, looking for by 12 or 1 o'clock, go home, because the bar's closed at 2 o'clock.
Right.
So most of us used to, you know, we get out there at 12:30. Right. You know, I used to me, it's couple of city I go out. Right. Other city I just hang right at the hotel lounge or bar. I'll be in my room.
Uh-huh.
I'll be playing poker with a couple more guys in the room. So, yeah, we had a curfew, but it wasn't nowhere like the minor league. The minor league, they check.
They check, bed check.
Yeah, bed check in the minor league. Me, huh? But in the big league, it's not that much checking.
What, you mentioned earlier that, you know, guys today in spring training get a lot more than you got in spring training when you were there at that level. What about equipment? What about, like, bats, balls, gloves, uniforms, conditions, clubhouse, everything? How is it now, that, and how does it compare to when you were playing ball?
It's night and day. The Major League clubhouse, I mean, equipment-wise, I mean, every other day you got shoes coming to you, and the equipment manager over there, they are the best.
Yeah.
Whatever you need, sweatshirts, socks. I mean, you know, it's always there. And the food, it's better than the average restaurant.
Right.
I mean, it's night and day. We used to have hot dogs and beans.
Yeah.
You know, I started to go to Seattle.
Yeah.
You know, I was the leader on the team.
Right.
And this clubhouse guy,
kind
of me. I used to give him, you know, we pay $20 a day. I probably give him $30 a day. Sometimes some clubhouse guy get $40 a day.
Right.
So this guy in Seattle knew I was a spokesman for the ball club. I said, Mitch, man, your guy ain't tipping. I said, man, they're tired of these ballparks. You know, the food is nowhere compared. Food in the clubhouse is nowhere compared to what they have in the concession stand now. You go to Oakland now, that's just like going to a restaurant.
Right.
But in the past, you know, they didn't have that type of food.
Yeah.
But no, it's the players get, I mean, it's unbelievable what they get now.
Especially money.
Well, it's $70 a day, no money.
How, when you were playing, like, for example, what was your signing bonus, do you remember?
I tell you, I was doing $22,000.
$22,000, which is pretty damn good for it.
At that time, in 1973.
But that would
right
be...
now, third round pick right now gets $700,000 plus.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. So that's a big difference.
I probably would have been the number one pick at that time.
Yeah. And what was the most you made in the majors in one your best year salary-wise?
Oh, $425,000. Which probably would have been something like
$1 million.
Five million.
$5 million.
Yeah, yeah.
Can you imagine that? That's incredible.
Oh yeah.
Inflation, huh?
Oh yeah.
God damn. Now, did you ever get cheated on a contract, you think, or not? Did you have a good agent, or did you have an agent?
Oh yeah, good. Charlie Dye was my agent. Very good. He talked to me, you know.
Yeah.
And I always learn money to make you happy. I signed a 5-year contract for $1.9 million for 5 years.
Yeah.
That's 5 years. They signed that for 1 year now.
Right.
You know, so I signed a 5-year, you know. And I wasn't going to hold out to be greedy, you know.
Right.
Because money, I played the game because I loved it. Yes, I want to have a good life.
Right.
You know,
sure.
Actually, to tell you the truth, you know, my money lasts me over 15 years after I got out of baseball.
Yeah.
So I'm happy with that, you know.
Sure.
You know, we had a clothing store, did $250,000 2 years in a row. And then we had an earthquake.
Yeah.
And then it hit 50,000 the next 2 years.
Right.
You know, the earthquake killed us because the whole city, downtown Oakland,
people
moved out, you know.
Right,
so
right.
I feel good about what I did.
Did you guys when you were playing, did you guys talk money? I mean, compare contracts and all that or not?
Money never was an issue to me.
Uh-huh.
I mean, how much money am I going to make? How are we going to do this?
Yeah.
I never, you know, today I'm not a money hunger person.
So then you didn't have, did you have to work during the off season or not? Could you get by with your salary?
Well, my first year, 2 years I went back to college during the winter, went to Cal State Hayward. 1 year I went into insurance because I got boy.
Yeah, right.
You know, right now I just told my boy, he's 14, 15 year old like your boy.
Yeah.
He don't want to hang with, he want to be with his daddy. You
right.
know, my reason for being here, because I could retire to Arizona.
Sure.
Is to be with him.
Well, yeah, because you love
him. So next year I told him, I mean, I live right here. You get home where you want to get home now. You're 15, you'll be 16 next year.
Yeah.
I'm going to go find me something to do where I ain't, and you get home where you, I'm going to lock in something that I can do, something that I enjoy. You know, I'm not going to, you know, not for the job, for the money. I mean, it's just so much dead period for me.
Yeah.
You know?
Right. So that you want to keep busy, in other words.
Yeah.
Yeah. When you were playing, were you superstitious at all?
No, not really.
So in other words, you never wore, like if you had a real good day, like that time you described about hitting two home runs and a triple, you didn't wear the same socks the next day or the same T-shirt.
You know what I said? Thank you, Lord, for blessing me today.
Right on.
The Lord always have guided me in my life. He guided me right now. I have my fault, but he guided me right now.
Well, no, none of us are perfect,
right.
That's for sure, yeah. Now, did you, you know, have a particular favorite uniform, you know, when you were playing? I know that they change uniforms over the years, but when you first went out to the A's, you know, they were this kind of a, they were still an ugly color, right? Real bright yellow and kind of a not as nice a green as later on, huh?
Well, with them, you know, the only thing when you talk about Univar,
yeah.
I used to, when I was in the minor leagues,
yeah.
I you know, sweatbands, you know,
yeah.
And I always said, sweatband and be, you know, and make you look more macho. I always said to myself, you know, you got to be good to wear that stuff. And I wore it at the end of my year, and I got a couple, and my best picture in baseball, it was when I put my big sweatband, and I looked at myself at the plate, and looked like, damn, I put fear in somebody.
Yeah.
And I couldn't do that when I was young, because I thought you had to earn that reputation to wear all that stuff to look macho,
right,
you know.
Right,
so I didn't have a special uniform, but I wish I'd have been, you know, sweatbands, this and that.
Right.
You know, I wish I'd have had more of a, when I went to the play, I feared no one, but to show no killer instincts.
Right.
I think that would have overcame Billy. If I, you know, Gallo, I let one man take the game away from me.
Yeah.
God, pitcher could not take the game away from me.
Right.
You know, but I let one man take the game, take the love for the game from me.
Right.
I wish I had that one little killer instinct. You know, I learned it from Bob Boone.
Sure.
Bob Boone is a good friend of mine. I coached for him.
I used to like to see him play.
And he was telling me a story that he was going around the channel when he was coming up with the Phillies. And he started to quit. And his dad came in. And that's one thing I remember about Bob Boone. His dad said something. He said, I'd be damned if you let one man take the game away from me. You know, and I met Bob Boone after I got the game. And you know what? When Boone told me that's what his dad said, I wish somebody would have told me that. Damn, Billy Martin, don't let this man take the game away from me. And I probably would have overcame it. You know, by the time I overcame it, you know,
it was too late.
Baseball people, you know, just gave up on me.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. What about, on a more positive level about your experience, you know, I'm going to ask you and think it over, you know, of all the guys you played with on your own team and against, who would be your all-star team?
Well, okay.
I would put you in right field, by the way.
No. I won't make it myself.
Okay.
First baseman, Willie Stargell.
Uh-huh.
Second baseman, Willie Randolph.
Mm-hmm.
Shortstop. Well, I give it to Rodriguez. I like him.
Mm.
Third base, Rick Robinson.
Mm-hmm.
Left field. Let's go to center field first.
Yeah.
Willie Mays.
Willie Mays.
McCovey. Well, he can't play first. Did I put a first baseman out there?
Stargell. Stargell, right. Yes,
well,
it was BH supposed
to. Well, Stargell started in outfield, though.
Yeah,
put Stargell in left field.
Exactly.
And put McCovey at first. Okay. What position I forget? Third base? No. Shortstop.
Catcher.
Well, you gotta give it to this two guy, Campanella or Johnny Bench.
Mm-hmm.
You know, pitcher. If I start the left hand pitcher, be Sandy Koufax.
Right.
Right hand pitcher, Don Garza.
Yeah. God, he was tough.
Yeah, he was.
Jesus Christ.
He took no prisoners.
No prisoners, man. No prisoners at all, man. How about just from the guys that you played with at the Oakland A's, all those seven?
What about them?
Yeah. An all-star team just from the A's that you played with.
All right. Catcher would be I give it to Jeff Newman. Very classy guy. Very classy guy. Third base, I give it to Wayne Gross. Shortstop, we're going to go back there. Second base. You know what? I mean, two kids that got buried behind Billy Martin.
Really?
Shooty Babbitt and Mike Edwards. Could have been better ball player. He buried him early.
Really?
At least I established myself where he could just wash me off. But, you know, I would put Shooty Babbitt, Mike Edwards, and Dick Green over there.
Yeah.
You know, first base, who I play with.
Yeah.
So we had some bad team in the place.
Yeah, I know you did.
You know. Mm. My first baseman over there. Dave Rebman. You put Dave Rebman out there. Then y'all feel this piece of cake.
Yeah.
Dwayne Murphy.
Right.
Tony Armas,
oh,
Ricky
yeah.
Henderson.
That was a great outfit.
That's a piece of cake.
Oh, man. That's
I'll be the DH.
Yeah, there you go. How, if you had the money and, you know, you said, I'm going to buy myself a baseball team, you know, who would you pick as your manager?
What manager today? The best manager I think in baseball?
Yeah.
I got the pleasure. That's going to change. I got the pleasure to work with Tony La Russa for the first time this year.
Right.
But, probably me. No, I did Tony. Tony La Russa, and you know, I mean, I never played for him. Yeah. Jack McKinn was okay. Billy Martin was okay. But you know, when you pick, see, I would take Tony because I never played for Tony Tony knew how to deal with the player.
Right.
Tony realized it take him 25 guys to win a ball club. When Billy Martin said, "Well, I can take 10 of these D," Billy Martin had 10 guys that love him, 10 guys that hate him, and the other 5 want to kill him.
Right.
But Tony Russo got all 25 guys. Is going to go to war for him. So if I had to pick a manager, if I invest $125 million or $200 million, I'll manage my own ball club because I know what I'm going to get the best out of all 25 guys. But otherwise, I'll take Tony La Russa.
Well, Mitchell, I want to thank you very, very much. It's been a pleasure. And you are now on your way to the Hall of Fame.
All right.